Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast, where we talk to foresters about how they are using digital technologies in their day-to-day forestry work. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Alex Van Gelder. He's the founder and CEO of Clear Timber Analytics. Alex, how are you doing today?
Hey, thanks. I'm good. Thank you very much.
Awesome. So where am I reaching you? I'm dying to know. I think you're across the pond from me, and maybe I'm across the pond from you, but whereabouts are you based?
We're definitely across the pond. We're based in Hilversum, the Netherlands, and that's about 30 minutes out of Amsterdam, the world famous Amsterdam.
The world famous. Why do you say world famous? I'm just joking, of course. I'm sure everyone has these connotations of Amsterdam. And I have to admit, I visited Amsterdam. Aside from those stereotypes, it was an amazing city. The canals are just gorgeous. The food, people, amazing. So I'd love to get back to Amsterdam at some point. Now, looking at your background, I believe you're Dutch, you know, studied there, you know, home is there. So maybe tell me a little bit about your background and how you got into forestry.
Absolutely. So first of all, first fun fact is I have an American mother, so I'm half Dutch, half American, but I did indeed grow up most of my life here in the Netherlands. And I grew up along a forest. So living in the Dutch countryside with lots of canals and cows, believe it or not, there are some places with a forest. I grew up there and I really just got that passion of how cool it is living in nature, but also every once in a while removing a tree and using it for a product such as a table. So when it was time to go to college, it went quite natural for me to decide to go study forestry. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. And so you mentioned, you know, one side of the parents is American, and so were they foresters or tied to some natural thing that created that impetus, maybe?
No, I actually, funnily enough, they're not. I always joke, I say I'm the black sheep in the family. So I've got a family that's all in the financial world, in the economic world, I guess. And I was the one who decided to go study forestry and nature conservation. I really decided to follow my passion, and that's where that got me today. Yeah.
That's amazing. Amazing. But I'm sure your parents might be thinking carbon markets, and maybe at some point they're going to kind of reel you into their world. And then the everybody's happy, family dinners are amazing conversations. So that's very cool. So maybe tell me a bit about your studies, because I know it seems like when I looked at your profile, while you were studying, you were also an entrepreneur, also doing things in the bioeconomy with biomass. So maybe share with me that journey and how that came to be.
Absolutely. So I studied in a Dutch university called Wageningen. Wageningen, we often call the European Cornell. So it's a real agricultural hub. And when I was studying there, I was studying forestry. We were getting wooden biomass was getting incredibly stimulated. So it was hot topic, and everybody said wooden biomass is going to be the new next exciting product. So the entrepreneur myself decided, all right, well, let's give it a try. Let's see if I can buy some of that stuff, and ended up selling it. So I we started trading wood chips, believe it or not. So for next to my studies, I would be buying piles of wood chips or branches and then having them chipped into wood chips and sell them to either local heating facilities here, but also companies that would make insulation from them. So they would really ground the wood chips into insulation. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And compared to your peers in school, was everyone doing this? Or I'm feeling this is kind of unique for someone to be doing this. Tell me more.
So that was joked a lot, actually, about back in the day, because I would be getting phone calls in the back of a classroom for some truck that was not able to find the pile of wood chips or the pile of branches. So it was quite joked about a lot. Yeah, I guess I was a special kid with my company, with my side business next to my study. Yeah,
that's amazing. That's amazing. And so when we think about that, obviously, you know, you finish school, and then right now with Clear Timber Analytics, maybe gone a different direction, even though biomass is part of, you know, everything carbon you're doing. But maybe introduce us to how Clear Timber Analytics came to be, what they do, how old you are, your mission, vision, and whatever else you want to share.
It started actually after my studies. I was lucky enough to work for the Dutch forestry department, I guess you would call it. And there I was also doing not only the wood and biomass, but I was also lucky enough to work on the timber sales. The Dutch Forestry Commission, what they do, or department, whatever you call it, I guess, what they do is they sell their timber, not standing, but really to the final sawmills. So they would organize the harvesting operations themselves. They would organize the transportation to the sawmills themselves. Being the Netherlands, we even would sometimes put timber in boats and ship it to sawmills. And when I was working in that department, I really noticed the need or for good inventories of the standing stock. This was 2020. Bark beetle was a big problem here in Germany and the Netherlands. And we were quite often hearing the story from foresters that they just couldn't manage the spread. They knew it was a problem and they knew it was spreading fast. But whenever you would ask, all right, so how big is that spread of the bark beetle and which areas are really getting hit worse? Foresters had difficulty really putting in numbers against it. And that's the start of Clear Timber Analytics. So I ended up calling a couple friends that I knew back in the day from university, more from the agricultural side, to be honest. And we got together. We put a couple drones over our forest, collected some data, downloaded the data, and within 2 days, we had a real simple machine learning algorithm to detect the infested trees. So basically, this idea from two evenings became the start of Clear Timber Analytics. That's where we started back in the day in 2020 with automated bark beetle detection to really help European foresters find the hotspots of that bark beetle problem. But one of the questions we kept on getting was, all right, great that you can count the number of trees that are infested and how big that area is. But us foresters here in Europe, I'm not sure how it is over there in Canada and America, but we always want to talk about cubic meters. We really want to know how much roundwood are we talking about. So that sort of sparked our idea to start using LiDAR. We are familiar with drones and airplanes here. So we started collecting data with LiDAR. And that really put us to the place where we are today, where that we share that our vision is to help foresters succeed worldwide by providing analytics. So we're not a forest advisory company. No, we're an analytics company. We work together with all different types of service providers. They collect data for our clients, and then we'll run the analytics, really enrich that data with tree-specific information, such as the growing stock of a forest. So I guess that's Clear Timber Analytics, accurate and precise solutions for foresters worldwide.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I can reassure you that no matter where you go, everyone's talking cubes or tons or something, the universal language. So thanks for the introduction there. And I've got a couple, I always joke, I get to ask the layperson's questions in the guise that, you know, folks are like, you know the answer to that. And it's like, often it's like, no, I don't know the answer. So I'm going to walk us back a little bit. So you talk about forest inventory in the Netherlands and then how you've effectively, what it sounds like, kind of transformed how they did it into something that is maybe faster, cheaper, more consistent, objective, or repeatable. But can you tell us what inventory looked like before, or the traditional methods? Was this something that was, you know, traditional timber cruising, or is it aerial photography? What did that look like before you got Clear Timber Analytics off the ground?
So there are two main methods here, are either the CIHI or the Woodstock measurements, which is based on a plot measurement. So if you were to have a forest, let's keep a nice square forest to keep it simple. And what we would do is we'll put a grid over that square forest and we'll say, all right, let's take an X amount of plots. And those plots will measure everything that we see. So we'll measure the number of trees. We'll measure how thick those trees are, how tall those trees are. And once we have all these plot measurements, we'll quantify it over the entire area. So we'll say these plots are representative for the entire forest. That was one of the struggles we had back in the days, because when we're selling timber and we're really trying to sell timber very precise and making annual planning and contracts for the sawmills, we really want to get our thumbs just right on the right amount that we want to sell at the end of the year. So you can imagine these inventories are quite important. You really want to know what you have standing so that you can end up selling the right amount at the end of the year.
Yeah, for sure. At the end of the day, it's if we don't have good inventory data, everything downstream for that often just kind of falls apart, or you lose more and more precision. Now, you mentioned the bark beetle. So here in Canada, if we look out west, we have the mountain pine beetle. Watching Europe and what's happening there, bark beetle seems kind of different, but similar in the sense of it's the pest disease. Tell me more about that for our listeners who are not in Europe. Is I know the answer is that this is impacting forest lands in Europe at a staggering scale, but maybe describe to us the extent that this little bug is, wreaking havoc, for you all.
Absolutely. So let's start all the way at the beginning. This beetle is mainly focused on the spruce trees, right? So it's the bark beetle for the spruce trees. And the spruce trees in this region of Europe, so Central Europe, is the economic pillar of forestry. They were planted massively back in the day, knowing that all our construction timber would all come from this spruce. So you can imagine if you have this one beetle that's sort of pestering the spruce population, it can become a real big problem. It's not actually the beetle that's really killing the trees at the end of the day. It's actually a combination of factors. So the spruce beetle, it's been around for generations. It will get right underneath the bark of a tree. That's where the magic happens with the tree. We have leaves or needles up in the photosynthesizing. Underneath from the roots, we're getting water. And when that beetle's there, it's just annoying the tree. And in combination with a drought like we've had the last couple 5 years here in this region of Europe, we get spruces that are either in a real low vitality state or they end up dying at the end of the day. And you can imagine for the forestry sector, when you have such an economic pillar that was planted massively back in the day, it's just all your investment for all those years is just going away.
Wow. And so when we think about, you mentioned drought, is this I thinking on the Canadian side, back in the day, we were not getting enough consistent cold days in winter to kill off our little bug. On your side, is it something tied to climate, or is this something expected that we've seen droughts in the historical records and we know that pests and bugs and disease are always going to be a factor? Or is this something that generally we would say ties back to that climate change that we're seeing here?
Yeah, exactly. It's climate change related. So I'm not, definitely not an extreme specialist on this bug. I'm not a biologist or anything, but we've noticed that this is definitely one of the consequences of climate change. Yeah.
For sure. So I guess this pest is this bug is killing things off, and then it's a matter of back to the question of, well, I need good inventory to figure out, what I'm going to do, or whether I'm salvaging dead wood or not. So very interesting. And you mentioned LiDAR. So LiDAR, for a forester nowadays, I kind of joke, who hasn't heard of LiDAR by now as a forester, even if you want to, put your head under a rock, you really can't avoid it. And so you mentioned largely drones carrying this LiDAR payload and mapping. Are these special things that you guys have built or engineered, or are these things you've partnered with other folks and built something with secret sauce to make it hum? But what can you tell us about the drone technology you're using and the LiDAR technology that you're using?
So, first of all, with the Netherlands, our knowledge with LiDAR is quite well developed. We're lucky enough that we have an annual, actually, it's every 2 years, we get a new countrywide LiDAR data set of the entire country from aerial data, from airplane data. And we're already on our sixth or seventh version, no, excuse me, sixth version now at the moment. So, we've had a lot of LiDAR knowledge here in the Netherlands. And with that knowledge, we've sort of applied it to the forestry industry. We like to use drones because that way we can fly even lower and slower than airplanes can. And with those LiDAR scanners underneath a drone, we can collect such high density point clouds that we can do all types of calculations. And that's where Clear Timber comes in. So it's not that much collecting the data, it's more analyzing the data. And that's that special sauce we're talking about. So I'm lucky enough to sit in an office where we have a couple software developers. We've been working with machine learning and AI for quite a long time now. And we've really been able to analyze the data in a way that foresters can really understand and better interpret the results.
Cool. And so you mentioned The Netherlands are flying at it sounds like a pretty high cadence in terms of new LiDAR data. You mentioned you're taking that data and applying it to forestry. So I'm going to assume forestry is not the driver behind these refreshes. What's the driver? I think I know, but I'm going to ask the question so I don't come out with a dumb answer and then you have a laugh. But what's the driver on that stuff?
Absolutely. So there are two main reasons. First of all, it's our exceptional coastline, the Netherlands, with the port of Rotterdam being the entrance to all of Europe. So we really want to know what is our coastline and if it's either growing or getting eaten up from the ocean. But it's also our infrastructure. We're such a densely populated country that we really want to plan every centimeter of our country here. So with that high population, it's really nice to have these data sets that are so accurate that we can really see, all right, how wide are our canals, for example? How are the slopes of the grades of the streets so that we can plan all types of work? And that's the main driver for LiDAR in the Netherlands, yeah.
That was my guess. So I'll let everyone assume that I was right by default there. That was my guess around the canals and mapping the terrain and making sure you really understand that. So when you started doing this, I guess you mentioned using AI and specifically machine learning. Was it smooth sailings in terms of building this and trying to convince the foresters, the Dutch foresters, that this was a better way of going it, or were there some speed bumps, as I like to call them, in terms of getting the foresters on board?
Absolutely. So I think the biggest challenge was finding the right scanner that was best applicable for our goal. Our goal back in the day was to take an aerial flight and measure the diameter of each and every tree of a forest. So you can imagine you're flying over a forest and you're collecting data for the trees that are 1 meter 30 breast height from the ground, right? You can imagine what a big struggle that was in the beginning, finding the right scanner that to use, doing the right flight specifications to collect the data in a way that that it comes into the office. And then just real simple stuff. The one data format worked a lot better than the other data format. It was yeah, it wasn't smooth sailing at all the first year. It really took a year of tinkering before we entered some calmer waters.
Right. So definitely some trials and adventures. I don't use the word errors, but trials and adventures there. So for clarification, you mentioned, you know, flying and seeing every tree. So in your mapping, are you focused mostly above the canopy, or are you actually coming into the forest and going below canopy for all your mapping?
Well, so that's what's so special is we really fly above the canopy. So we'll fly over the trees to collect data underneath the canopy. I guess that's the real power for LiDAR, for the people who don't use LiDAR daily, is that these laser beams are able to, when shot so many pulses per second, that we can really get all these laser beams that also go around leaves or needles to collect data on a tree stem, for example.
Right. Very cool. And are there other remote sensing technologies that you rely on, like any of the camera stuff for species, or is this predominantly a LiDAR driven solution and you can do everything you need, even species, off of the LiDAR?
Yeah, so we mostly use aerial LiDAR, but we also enrich our data with some satellite imagery. I guess we'll get to that in a little bit, but we can already hint that our automated species tree detection, we do that on the raw point cloud. That makes us pretty nerdy, but also pretty special at the same time. I'll elaborate on that later. But when we, every once in a while, we get some questions on growth monitoring, for example, and the vitality of a forest. And that's when we tend to use satellite imagery as well. So we'll use the LiDAR scan as a base line measurement, and we'll enrich it with satellite imagery to give our clients a better picture and understanding of of what's going on in the forest.
Right, for sure. And so when we think about land bases, right, and in some areas, the land bases are huge in that million hectare range or above. And a lot of folks, you know, conclude a drone platform can't scale for that land base. And then some other geographies, maybe you look to the States or the US or probably even Europe, like land is more compartmentalized, smaller, that a drone is perfect. Is your solution, the Clear Timber Analytics solution that we'll talk more about, of course, Is it really tied to the platform? Or let's say someone said, Alex, I'm going to take my air. I'm a billionaire. I'm going to take my aircraft and fly aerial LiDAR and just like, you know, do it nonstop because I have nothing else to do and just sit in the airplane and I'm going to collect this massive point cloud. Would that work with your solution, or is there secret sauce in how you've tuned your platform to get the maximum out of that mapping that you're doing?
We've built our solution that you can upload any LAZ file. LAZ is the result of a LiDAR scan, and you can upload that to our portal, and the results will come out what we can measure. It's good to know that if we're collecting points from the air on the tree stems, then we could try our best to do a diameter calculation. But if the points aren't in the data set, then we can't really do the calculation. That's, I guess, one of the first discussions I always have when selling our product is that you really need to understand if we collect the data that you want, then you can also get the insights that you desire.
Right.
But so if the points are on the tree stems, we can do diameter calculations. Yeah.
Okay. So very cool. So maybe walk me through. I know we kind of touched on it, like some of the more advanced capabilities. Walk me through that workflow, the magic, I guess. You know, you talked about, you know, pulling out individual trees, you know, from the scan, doing the species classification off of the point cloud and all that magic with your AI. And obviously I assume you need some plot data to train things, or is your analytics at a level where you have a reference library that you really don't need plot data, training data anymore, because you've already collected enough of that, you know, you can apply. But maybe dive for the data nerds or GIS nerds. And I always say that in a loving way, just for our listeners and viewers. I'm a nerd myself. I'm okay saying that. So I don't say that in a disparaging way. But for our nerds out there, our digital forester nerds, you know, maybe drop us down one level, give us some guts here in terms of the platform. What's the magic here? Are we in the cloud and we've got all sorts of things firing together? What can you share on that front to get everyone excited?
We'll start with data collection itself. So there is some sort of aerial flight, either an airplane or a drone with a LiDAR scanner, or let's say a helicopter with a LiDAR scanner. It will fly over the forest. It's going to collect all this data. That data will come in the format of an LAZ file to our platform. So the person flying the drone or whatever will say, all right, let's grab that data. Let's put it on the platform. And one of the first things that happens on our portal is, and this is cloud-based, is that we're going to start filtering the data. So we're going to go through all those points. We're going to label them. We're going to say, all right, which points are ground points, for example, that have been collected on the bottom of the train, which points belong to trees, and which points belong to noise, either collected with on a misty day or you name it. And from all those points, we'll check the product that our client wants. Let's say they want a diameter measurement of trees. What will happen is each and every individually detected tree will get sort of extracted from the data set. So our algorithm will say, okay, which points belong to tree A, which points belong to tree B, and they'll get extracted from our data set. And then the computer will start all the different types of calculations. For example, it'll try to see if it can measure its diameter of that tree at breast height, 1 meter 30. It's going to have a look. All right, what's the height of that tree? What's the crown volume of the tree? One of the questions we get quite often is how tall is the trunk of the tree that is clear timber, that the precise timber without any branches? And each and every tree will go through this analysis. We were lucky enough that a lot of this happens in the cloud, so we can go through trees within seconds. And then at the end of the day, our clients will get a result. They'll get, for each tree, they'll get the GPS coordinates, and they'll get some information regarding either the diameter or any other deliverables that they asked for, such as the pruned height of a tree stem. And so just quickly give you an idea, data gets uploaded, it goes through indeed a cloud platform that we've built ourselves to analyze the data, and the results will come out in a much smaller format at the end of the day that more or less every forester can open on his or her computer.
Very cool, very cool. And so what's the largest thing you've had to shove through the pipeline? Because I know a lot of folks say, well, Alex, it's like if I gotta send it up to the cloud, I've got high speed internet, but I'm only at 50 megabits. It's still gonna take a long time to push all those LEZ files or LAZ files, potato potatoes up. What's the average size you normally deal with? And then what's the biggest one you've actually ever punch through it, and how much time are we talking so our listeners kind of get a sense? Is it real time? Is it, near time? What can you say?
So let's first do it on the point cloud specifications. I have to my left here, I have the whiteboard with our records at the moment. Our biggest one at the moment was 14 billion points. That
Oof.
was one point cloud. Yeah. So that was 14 billion points. And that took the computer or the cloud actually overnight. So that took one night. So I'd say somewhere like 6 hours to run the entire analysis. Size wise, we're looking at our biggest project at the moment was about 1500 hectares. And that's really when we use that drone data to really get these really dense point clouds.
Yeah, that's a good size, 1500 hectares, and definitely processing. So sounds like you fine-tuned it, or the team has fine-tuned things to maximize throughput and extractions from that. And so super cool. So maybe tell me about some of the other things you would deliver. I know there's some growth and yield components when I was looking at the website and other things, and your notes as well that you've shared with me. But what are some of those other, I don't want to call them value add, because you clearly mentioned, we're an analytics company. So by default, when I hear that, everything you do is a value add. It's not, you're not the surveying company, you're not the agency company as you described. So really it's taking what somebody has and adding value, or adding multiple layers of value, if you will. But what are some of those other things that people might ask you about? And is there a pattern, like rinse repeat, the foresters are asking the same thing, the Dutch foresters versus maybe you have customers elsewhere? Is there some pattern there in terms of the offering?
So let's first grab what often happens is that we have clients who are familiar with LiDAR data and they're familiar with terrain mapping with LiDAR data. So they're familiar with more or less deleting all these points that they collected on the vegetation to get a terrain model of their forest. And one of the conversations we often have is, hey, have you had a chance to look at all that data that's also been collected on the vegetation that you just deleted to generate a terrain model? That's often one of the starting points just to start the conversation. And what we're seeing nowadays is that we're really helping with growth modeling. So we're lucky enough when we're doing these type of analysis, we can measure so many trees and we can get so much information from these trees that we've noticed that we're updating growth tables. So here in this centralized part of Europe, there are a lot of foresters, they plan their work based on growth tables. A growth table sort of shows, all right, when the tree is at this age, it could be that diameter, meaning it'll be this and this tall, for example. And we're really sort of updating those growth curves.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially if you're doing these projects at a higher temporal frequency, if you will, you can probably really localize that information and increase the precision. So thinking of the technology, it's like, is there a price point you can share in terms of what people can expect? Is it SaaSy, where if they go to your website, they'll find the basic pro enterprise and here's the cost? Or is it one of those scenarios where it depends on the project? What can you share on costs for those who are listening that might go, hey, I wanna call Alex up and maybe get some more info on what analytics they can do?
So unfortunately, we're in one of those depends scenarios, because it really depends on what's the question the customer has. Of course, we've standardized some stuff. It's sort of getting SaaSy, but we're at the phase that it's really, all right, how big is your forest or your area of interest? Are you going to collect the data yourselves, or are we going to do that for you? And what type of analysis would you like? Would you like only a tree counting, for example? That's a real simple analysis for us. Or do you really like information on the diameter and even the tree species? Then it's getting more expensive. We've priced it in two different ways. You either do a point cloud size pricing. That's sort of what we targeted for people who collect data themselves, or an hectare-based pricing, so an area-based pricing. And that's when we'll help with the data collection.
Right. I love it. It's kind of funny often where people hear that response of it depends, and they feel like folks are, you know, trying to maybe be disingenuous and not share information. But the reality, and to your point, in many situations, it really does depend. Like, what is it you want? At what level of accuracy and precision? And, you know, that I suspect is going to fine tune how you actually acquire the data to drive your pipelines, your analytics. Absolutely. And so thinking of what you're offering, I'm going to pull us into a direction, because again, you're a young guy. It's like, I can sense, you know, you've got lots of other ideas. So I want to pull you into the more broader technology discussion. But thinking of our notes, is there anything else, Alex, you want? And we can come back, of course, but thinking of Clear Timber Analytics, in terms of what you do, is there anything else we wanted to highlight as unique or special that you'd want our listeners and viewers, our audience to be aware of?
Absolutely. So since more or less last year, we've also started entering the urban environment. So cities and municipalities. We're with this with the new mobile mapping hype, I guess we could call it, where companies are driving around with cars and they're mapping the urban environment, we're becoming more or less almost like a contractor, I guess, for these companies when they want a digital tree inventory. So let's name any city in the world. Let's grab Amsterdam here. So Amsterdam would like a digital tree inventory. And what we'll do is we'll help these mobile mapping companies by analyzing the data that they get, and we'll run our tree inventory scripts for them. So that way, these mobile mapping companies can start selling digital tree inventories to an environment that we would never operate in, because we're really hyper-focused on our forest analytics. So that's what we've been up and running with lately. And what's, I guess, drumroll please, the most exciting moment or product at the moment is our automated tree species detection. So the last 2 years, we've kept it really hush-hush that we've been working on an automated tree species detection on raw point cloud data. So that means without point cloud data, without any classification, just a raw point cloud comes in, and then we've built a script to detect the tree species just purely on growth structure. So we at the moment, we have 10 species that I think you and I can name together, from a spruce to a Douglas fir to a beech tree, an oak tree, to a birch tree. We've got 10 species at the moment that we're happy with, and we're up and running. And by the end of the year, we want to update that with 50 more species. So we hope to start 2025 with 60 automated tree species that we can detect.
Yeah. Wow. So that's super cool. And so I come back to, you know, the training data. It sounds like ultimately Clear Timber Analytics wants to have its own reference library, where a customer may not have to put boots on the ground for that land base. Like you've seen that type of tree and those, you know, site conditions and everything. Like, you can pull it out of the point cloud based on structure. That's super cool. And I'm going to guess that was probably a labor of love, and maybe still a labor of love, maybe lots of sleepless hours. But where did that inspiration, what, so maybe I guess the first question is the urban environment side of things, chasing that. Are those folks mobile, like flying, or I shouldn't say flying, but I guess driving LiDAR, or maybe riding LiDAR being in Amsterdam, or is it more photo-based type of 3D point clouds that largely your technology, again, doesn't care, it's a LEZ file and we're good as long as it fits that format. But what are they using on that mobile level in their urban environments?
Yeah, so for the urban environments, it is indeed a lot of driving data. So it's mobile mapping with cars. Yeah, so they drive around with cars with a big LiDAR scanner on the back. My LinkedIn is filled with pictures from America where they grab big pickup trucks and put a LiDAR scanner on the back. So that data they'll collect while driving down the highway, I guess, and they'll once they get home, they'll download that data and they'll upload it to our portal.
Very cool. Very cool. And so thinking of your tree species, the new technology, because I kind of sense you're coming out of stealth a little bit. And I know you and I were trying to schedule this and I kind of sense, you know, it's like Alex is probably working on some top secret stuff. So timing of things when you go public is key. How do people test that with you? Because I know within our global audience, LiDAR use and adoption is all varying levels. Folks flying drones, folks flying aircraft, some, you know, even podcasts about future spaceborne types of LiDARs. How would people interact with you? Like folks who have listened to this going like, hey, you know what? I got a data set. I want to test with this thing. Is this one of those, you know, I'm going to pump it into the portal and it's going to go, or is it still maybe beta and it's best for them to get in touch with you directly?
So that phase we are with those 10 species at the moment, we're really at a beta phase, and we really want to have that conversation that we really understand how have you collected that data. Unfortunately, some of the bigger drone brands are now launching their own LiDAR scanners that are just not getting enough points at the moment, where some clients hope they should be. And that's really when we have to be, as an analytics company, have to be realistic. It all depends on the quality of the data you collect. So if we build that relationship together with our beta partners, we really understand what type of data they're collecting, how are they collecting it. That way we can really manage expectations. At the same time, those, I guess, more popular brand LiDAR scanners are also helping us train our algorithm to work on less good point clouds. So it is, if you are if you are a drone pilot collecting LiDAR data with, for example, the DJI L2, feel free to reach out to us, because we use that data sort of to train our models to work on less quality point clouds. Yeah,
very cool. Very cool. Love it. And out of curiosity, thinking of drones again, because I'm always on these podcasts trying to anticipate what our audiences are thinking or asking. And I guess when we think about drones, regulations around the world are very different. And I do remember early days of LiDAR where, you know, some of our old mentors would say, you know, not all LiDAR is the same. And I definitely get it now, to your point. The only thing in common is the word LiDAR, but beyond that, you know, it could be a dog's breakfast and what data is collected, and some are unknowing to that. But as I think about that piece, maybe just for our listeners who aren't familiar with the Netherlands, and maybe I don't know if it applies to the EU in general, but for flying a drone, is it pretty heavily regulated? Like I know in North America, jurisdictions, you have to have a drone pilot license, you have to go through formal training, versus some other countries, the response I get is a blank stare, and then they basically toss the drone into the air and say like, I don't know what you're talking about. You want to fly a drone? You fly a drone. But maybe share some information in terms of the Dutch landscape, where drone technology at. Is it super mature that it's a staple tool and there's good governance around that?
Absolutely. So it's good to know that within the EU, it's been regulated now recently, and there are different categories. So you can imagine the larger drones fall into another category as the smaller drones. But we're lucky enough that that's been regulated. And yeah, I myself am a certified drone pilot, and we work a lot with certified drone pilots as well, just to be able to fly in the forest that we operate. It's good to know that the way we work as well, further away from home, is that we always work with service providers. So, for example, for a client in Australia or in Africa or even Southern America, we'll find a service provider who will collect the data for us, who has his or her certificates to fly in that region. So an Australian drone pilot who, first of all, speaks the language. Well, in Australia, that's not that difficult, I guess, but...
Well, some might say it's difficult. Some might say it's difficult.
Right? But so, and they know the local regulations. So that's really how we've got that tackled. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. And so I want to take you maybe, we'll come back to Clear Timber Analytics at the end, but I want to take you maybe left field or right field, or whichever sport field we're talking about analogy. One thing we're hearing a lot in the press, I shouldn't say press, but in general communities, is the whole EUDR and regulation that the last I heard, there's some countries that are not in support. I think France and Germany were in support. Other countries were no longer in support. And then again, not understanding fully EU politics, I guess there's the risk. I shouldn't say risk, the chance, the event that this regulation might not actually get passed. But what does that, the EUDR, mean to you? And maybe introduce us to what it is at a high level. But I suspect what you described, it's what you're doing is kind of key in terms of maybe that initial snapshot inventory to then trigger that chain of custody question on knowing how many trees we have, how big they are, what they are, before they actually start going through that value chain. But what does the EUDR mean to Clear Timber Analytics, if anything at all?
So interesting enough, we've got it from a totally different sector. We've been working in the cacao sector recently, helping with yield modeling of cacao pods, also using LiDAR. But one of the problems or challenges, I guess we could say, is how do cacao plantations or people who are growing cacao either in Africa or Southern America, how can they report to Europe that they have not illegally cut down any wild growth forests to further expand their cacao operations? And I guess this is where it gets so exciting with forest analytics. If we can help with Clear Timber show that there has no wild growth forest has been cut down to expand these cacao plantations, that really gets us quite exciting, is that how we can help all these different sectors reporting on forests. On the other hand, it does make stuff a little bit more of a headache here in the Netherlands with importing new products. But hey, everybody likes a good challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then you might need to have a subsidiary called Clear Cacao Analytics, maybe, and then you can go on from there. You mentioned, you know, you guys were early on using AI and machine learning and maybe deep learning, whatever the flavor is. But as you look at where the world is today, and especially in the forestry space, often, you know, when I talk to people, some digital foresters are excited about AI. And yet when you ask them about the state of their data holdings, a lot of it's still on paper or just not organized. And it's as you know, it's kind of hard to have an AI conversation when, you know, the building blocks, the foundation blocks aren't there. But as you look forward, maybe if I was to say, bring you maybe, let's say, short term 3 years and then 10 years, what does AI look like to you in that 3 and longer 10 year time frame? And then more importantly, maybe what does it mean to you in the context of forestry?
Yeah. So first of all, I think AI is definitely going to be a tool that for the forestry sector will embrace. Both within 3 years or 10 years. Yes, us foresters are known for being a little slow-paced when adapting to new technologies. But just forward-looking 3 years, I think some small tasks of a forester will be helped with. For example, let's grab that automated tree species detection. If you are looking at a tree, you don't have to write down anymore which tree species there is, or just when you want to double check if your thoughts are the same as what a computer would guess, I guess, that could be very helpful. And looking forward to 10 years, I really hope that AI can help foresters indeed just with their daily tasks and structure some of that data that they have printed out. Hopefully they can get that digitalized. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we think about technology in general, if we were to again repeat that exercise and say, you know, 3 years out, 10 years out, what gets you excited each morning from a technology point of view? Are you living and breathing the latest and greatest and that's doing the job? Or is there something out there that you're just like, gee whiz, I'm really keeping my eye on this because I think in some point in the future, this may be a disruptor or maybe an accelerator. I don't know. But is there something technology-wise that you're kind of just keeping an eye out and what it could mean for Clear Timber Analytics?
Absolutely. So we've really focused on LiDAR. I think the last 45 minutes we've been talking that much about LiDAR. But in the office, we really say that LiDAR is the new photogrammetry of how photogrammetry was 10 years ago. So photogrammetry is just a normal drone taking normal RGB pictures. And we're really seeing that now that LiDAR is getting so adopted in all these different sectors that the price of these scanners are dropping because it's just very simple. More and more are getting sold. But also the accuracy and the precision of these scanners is dramatically increasing. So we're getting cheaper scanners that are collecting even better data. I hope that in 10 years from now, when we look back, that we can compare it very much to photogrammetry.
Yeah. And so maybe for our audience, when you say cheaper scanners, cheaper is always relative or cost is relative. What can you share about that in today's market? Like $1,000 order of magnitude, 5,000, or what does cheaper mean today? And where would you like to see it? Or where do you think it needs to go to maybe reach more mass adoption that you could have multiple clear timber analytic projects all running in parallel?
Absolutely. So the scanners that we are happy with start, and I always speak in euros, are the scanners that we are happy with that we work with start around €60,000. And the high-end scanners that we're working with are around 200, 250,000 euros. We really hope that we can drop that number towards the 30,000 euros. That'd be great to really get a high-end professional scanner under drones for your little larger forestry companies who are willing to fly them. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's even great because I think for our audience as the digital forester audiences, initially when they were thinking, you know, cheap and affordable, they're probably thinking in the couple thousand dollar range, right? We know there's some in that range, but again, question, I shouldn't say questionable data, the quality of data may not meet the project requirements. So it's good to hear that again, these are still, you know, maybe not recreational, if that's the right word, LiDARs. There's still maybe, you know, mapping survey grade light type of LiDARs that you're using. Does multispectral LiDAR excite you at all? Do you see a future for that? Or is it kind of, you know, because there's always that wave, as I call it, of the multispectral, then hyperspectral, and so forth from the imagery side of things. But is that something that you guys think about and see potential for what you're doing?
We are excited about it, but at the same time, we're very stubborn here at the office. We're convinced that one LiDAR flight, a normal LiDAR flight with these high-end scanners that I just mentioned, they collect so much data and we can get so much information from this data that we're just going to keep it with these standard high-end LiDAR scanners at the moment.
Yeah, there you go. I feel like there's probably a misfit in your team that will listen to this after and go like, that's not my thesis, Alex. It's like, I believe this, and then let the debate begin. So that's part of the fun. From the point sampling density point of view, maybe some basics of the LiDAR with these units that you're referencing, is it really a point density issue, or are we at that stage where, you know what, you do a basic flight following clear timber analytics protocols, you're getting reams of data, like more than you need? Or is there still, do you see room for, hey, if we can double the points per square meter, that's going to add value? I guess the question is, at what point do we reach that kind of saturation level? We hit that asymptote where more points just doesn't even help. Or do you think we're still early and there's way more points that we need to get to help?
The more closed the canopy is, the more difficult it is to get points underneath that canopy. Our tree calculations, what you sort of hinted at, are sort of the best point cloud density, I guess, would be about 4,000 points per square meter. We have point clouds here with 8,000 points per square meter. But really, that 4,000 points is how we've seen sort of as a sweet spot. Of course, we can run analytics on point clouds that are less dense. That's no problem at all. It's just when we find that sweet spot, let's just keep it at 4,000 points per square meter. Yeah.
Well, it'd be interesting to see, as you describe, you know, your species, auto species classification technology, like how does point density, like what is that sweet spot across those species? Are they all the same or are they all different? And then that will be intel or IP that you would obviously know and protect. And so as we're looking to wind down, Alex, thinking about, you know, our conversations, what else, is there anything else about clear timber analytics you wanted to share with our audience, something neat, or I'll save my last question for you after that one, but is there anything else you wanted to touch on in terms of the company and its growth trajectory?
Yeah. So I think most importantly is as we based our analytics on a cloud-based platform, we can help foresters worldwide. When we put them on a map, you really can see that we can operate all the way from Finland to Australia at the moment. And that's a great power of, I guess, this technology. We'll end up finding a service provider either close to you or you can collect the data yourself and you can upload it to our platform. Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. I love the model because I think a lot of folks listening, how do you get going with Clear Timber Analytics? Well, you know, talk to Alex or upload your data, then see what magic actually comes about. So my interesting question, or maybe the funny question I've started asking people is what's the most interesting experience to date that you've had while working at Clear Timber Analytics? Is it a specific project that you hold dear to your heart? Is it some vigorous debate that you've had with a colleague about something? Is there a story that kind of pops to mind that captures that Clear Timber Analytics culture or DNA?
Absolutely. So I guess we're not very proud of it, but one time we had that a drone came back after a long day of flying and it was sort of getting dusk at the end of the day. And we saw this unbelievably expensive LiDAR scanner dangling on its antenna cable underneath the drone. So you can imagine this is an extremely expensive drone up in the air with a way more expensive scanner underneath it. That should be mounted very well with a mounting bracket, but just so many hours of flying, that thing was dangling on its antenna cable. It's amazing. So that antenna cable, we framed it and we've hung it up in the office because it really shows that even though you trust your gear, you always have to check twice.
Yeah, and I'm sure there is many choice words as that drone came back. It's like land that thing now for the love of bleep 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 bleep. But a few maybe panic attacks there. So hey, Alex, it was great to have this conversation with you. As we look to wind down, I know one of the customary things we do is we ask folks what's the best way people can reach themselves, because often with this, believe it or not, like a lot of folks actually jump on and want to follow up. So I'll ask a question to you for those that are in our audience that are like, gee whiz, I want to try this. I want to chat and explore some relationship, partnership, or even join the beta projects that you describe. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
Absolutely. So our website is cleartimber.com. You can reach me, Alex, at cleartimber.com. And I'm also very active on LinkedIn. So feel free to reach out. And I look forward to meeting the fellow digital forester podcast listeners.
Absolutely. So there you go, folks. If you want to grab a hold of Alex, you can reach him on LinkedIn. He definitely is there as well. And then as well through a company website and email that he shared. So, hey, Alex, I really enjoyed this conversation, learning more about what you folks do, because I actually had no clue. So I'm pleasantly surprised. And in reality, my mind is actually firing as well in terms of little things that maybe we can explore as some projects. So I want to thank you for carving out some time to talk to this guy. I know it's late on your end. So definitely it was a pleasure to meet you and looking forward to what the future brings for Clear Timber Analytics.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Talk soon.